Welcome back into hour number two. My name is Jim Rome. All right, setting it up. That was a good, smooth, easy first hour with a ton of NFL. As I mentioned, I could easily go 3 hours on what happened alone yesterday in the NFL, but I'm not doing that. There's so many other things I want to talk about as well. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You've got the NFL, more on that. You've got college football. I've got Andy Staples coming up later on this hour, and we will get into that with him. In the meantime, your phone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. We start hour number two by having a conversation with the first sports writer to be honored as outstanding journalist by the Nevada Press Association. He covers both boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. We consider him a very good friend of the program. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, it is good to have you back. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great, Jim. How'd you like those fights the other day?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. You know I did because, well, how can you not like Izzy Adesanya? Let me start right there. You spoke with Israel Adesanya before the fight, the lead up to the fight. What was the conversation with him like, and what did it tell you about where his head was and who he is as a person?
I mean, he is such an interesting guy, Jim. I mean, he really is fascinating. He has such a diverse interest in life. You know, he's a great fighter. He's, you know, that was his 100th victory that he had the other day. So obviously he loves to fight and he's put the work in. But he has interest in a lot of other things and a lot of other areas in his life, not just fighting. You know, he loves anime. He loves dance. He's a really socially conscious guy. And he felt all along this was going to be an easy fight for him. Dana White was calling it potentially the fight of the year. And when you looked at it on paper, it made sense. You know, Paulo Costa was 13-0. He had 11 first-round finishes, or excuse me, 9 first-round finishes, 11 knockouts, 1 submission. I mean, the guy was just everything you would draw up in central casting for an opponent for the champion. And Izzy made short work of him. I thought, you know, he was amazing, and he was right on the money. What he said was going to happen is exactly how it played out.
Kevin Ioli joining us. You're so right, Kevin. It's exactly the way that played out. And I got to admit that as much as I really, really like and respect Izzy, and I remember the first time I had him on the show, Kevin, I was blown away. Yeah. I mean, you know athletically, and you know how gifted he is, but I was just blown away by his presence, his charisma, that it. I think we all know that he was not great against Romero, and I thought looking at Costa and what he had been doing and going through guys, I did not think it would be easy, and it was. What was your reaction to how things went at that stare down between the two of them on Friday?
You know, I think that it showed that Costa was doing something to get in his head because he felt like he hadn't really been successful in the lead up to the fight. So he thought maybe he would throw him off and get into his head and try to, you know, put in, hey, I may fight you. You know, the black belt was a symbol. Hey, I'm going to grapple you. And I don't think anybody on earth believed that Costa was going to grapple with his. You know, I think everybody believed that he was going to do what he did. He was going to walk out toward him and try to, you know, kind of strike with him. I mean, his success, even though he's a black belt, his success as a fighter had been a guy like, you know, going downhill and just, you know, like a freight train coming at you and you can't stop him. And he's always throwing punches. But what he found with Adesanya was he could be right in front of him and couldn't hit him. And that is really, that's what Floyd Mayweather did in boxing to so many people. And it just frustrated so many guys. You know, he's right in front of you. You see him right there and you still can't hit him. And that was kind of what it was like for Paulo Costa. And I think, you know, he was trying to figure a way to mess with Izzy's head. And, you know, Izzy is the master at that, and he wasn't going to play that game.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. You know, he recently, Izzy, signed an endorsement deal with Puma, so he is poised to become an even bigger star, but that would have all taken a major hit had he not shown up well against Costa, who was supposed to be, as we talked about, the biggest threat he had faced. When Izzy started to go to his legs early on, what did you make of that strategy, and what kind of an impact did it have on Costa and the fight?
I think anytime you're fighting a guy like Costa who is going to be coming at you putting pressure, if you can chop his legs up, that's the one thing in MMA that differentiates it from boxing. You know, a guy who's putting pressure on you in boxing, I mean, you can't do that. But you can really force him to stop coming at you, and I think that's what Izzy did. I mean, you know, he had a couple of kicks early on, and you saw the welts growing on his legs. And by late midway in the first round there, he was struggling to move well on it. So, you know, he really had a good strategy because you eliminate that power. If you don't have that big base underneath you, then that power goes away. You know, we all know the power comes from the legs. And he did a great job of taking that away, and there was not that huge of a threat at that point.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. Then in the post-fight interview, Kevin, Izzy had a little something for everybody. Quote, I've been telling you guys, like Roy Jones said, y'all must have forgot. Y'all must have forgot because of what happened last time. Oh, he's so boring. And I see you media people as well with your little clickbait headlines, end quote. So what did you make of the interview? How'd you like that?
Well, I thought it was great, but I did say in my column, I said, I don't think anybody forgot. Everybody was raving about him before the fight. And, you know, the difference between Romero and Costa, and I wrote this, normally Romero was like Costa, a guy who attacked. But in that particular fight, he did not attack. And they were both basically playing counterpuncher, and Romero never went out of that mode. And so as a result, you know, it was not that much of a fun fight. Costa, though, was going forward. He promised he would go forward. He did. And he played into Izzy's strategy. So I don't know that anybody, you know, was down on Izzy. Everything I saw was, you know, praising him. So I thought it was great. It's always good to make yourself, you know, look like, you know, you're doing things people don't think you can do. And that, I think that's what that bit was all about.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. Now, Kevin, for those who don't necessarily follow the sport or like the sport, you made the argument on Saturday that Izzy is the biggest star in the sport. That is really high praise, and you're not somebody who's just going to throw that around casually. Lay that out for everybody. What makes you say that about him?
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, you talk about Conor McGregor and you say, well, you know, Conor McGregor is the biggest pay-per-view star. Yeah, but how often does Conor McGregor fight? Izzy has fought five times since Conor fought once. And Adesanya appeals to so many different groups. His fights are exciting. You know, you throw that Romero fight out, and you look at the fight with Kelvin Gastelum was a fight of the year. You know, Robert Whittaker, an incredible knockout, a great performance the other day. I mean, on and on and on is the kind of fights he has. He's fighting the best guys. You know, he's not looking to fight number five and number eight. You know, he called out Jared Cannonier the other day. He's looking to fight the best guys. He's vowing to fight John Jones, even at heavyweight. John Jones is going to heavyweight. He says, I will fight John Jones at heavyweight. I think you have a guy like that who wants to fight everybody, who is a killer in the ring, virtually unbeatable, has so many ways to beat you that is incredible. And then he has that personality, and I think he's going, you know, there's some people, you know, him speaking out on the Black Lives Matter, you know, that's going to be a little bit of a source of controversy. There's going to be a lot of people that support him for that, but there's also going to be some people that say, well, you know what, I don't like that. He shouldn't talk about that. They want to see him lose. But it was like I mentioned Floyd Mayweather before, Jim. Some people watch to see him win, other people watch to see him lose, but everybody watched. And I think that's what's coming with Izzy.
I was going to say, that's it. Kevin Ioli covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. And Kevin, you start off by saying, how did I like the fights? This was not the only fight worthy of watching that night. Izzy may have been the star of UFC 253, but also there was Jan Blachowicz. When he's not a household name before the weekend, Blachowicz, I should say. But for those who are not familiar with him, how would you describe his career prior to Saturday night?
You know, I think he was a guy that was trying to find himself for a lot of his UFC career. You know, he was successful outside the UFC, held regional titles, got into the UFC, and he started to change things. And this is a guy that, you know, a big physical guy who has some quickness. You know, he has a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He's a very strong puncher. But he changed camps immediately upon coming into the UFC. And so he was kind of like a 500 fighter. But the thing was that you could see in him all along, he had the makings of something very good. And I think it turned around for him when he fought Luke Rockhold. You know, Luke Rockhold moved up, the former middleweight champion, moved up to light heavyweight. And a lot of people thought, hey, this is going to be Rockhold's division. He's going to go in there and, you know, he's going to be the threat to John Jones. And Jan Blachowicz just blew him out of the water, broke his jaw. And I think what happened is he got back to his original team. He got back to his original style, which is power, and if he gets you to the ground, he's able to grapple with you. And I just think, you know, he's a guy that's going to be a tough out. I don't know that he's like Izzy, that, you know, he's in for a long reign, but I think he's going to be a tough out for anybody. There's whoever he fights in that division, you know, can't rest, because this guy has a lot of things that make you win fights.
You know, Kevin, I got a lot of respect for Dominic Reyes. I could not have been more impressed with the way Blachowicz attacked him in the second round and then finished off Reyes. What kind of a statement did he make overall with that performance?
Hey, look, you know, Reyes was really hot. A lot of people thought he had beaten John Jones in February. It was a very close fight. Then he goes out and the UFC did a piece on him, and they showed, you know, he had the fastest reaction time of anybody they had ever timed. You know, he was a former All-American football player, you know, who had been really good, you know, a really good athlete. And so a lot of people thought he was the next big thing. And you know what? Błachowicz just had a great game plan, totally neutralized him. You saw that Dominic was unable to get off. You know, he really was not throwing. And then in the second round, when he started to try to throw, you know, Jan countered him perfectly and really made it difficult for him and eventually finished him. I thought that, you know, Dominic, I picked Dominic to win the fight, and I thought he would probably win it impressively. And, boy, I was wrong on that. Jan just really had a great game plan and executed it perfectly.
Especially when he went to the body with the kicks. Devastating kicks. All right, speaking, Kevin, of huge stars, there has been some talk about a Manny Pacquiao Conor McGregor boxing match. Exactly where is this talk coming from?
Well, certainly Conor wants that fight. So there's a little feud going on now between Conor and Dana White, which isn't going to help this fight get made. Conor did not like the fact that Dana had said Conor didn't want to fight. He released a series of text messages that he had with the UFC president, and talking about different fights, and so as a result, he said, I switched to Manny Pacquiao. Well, the interesting thing on that, some credence goes to it right away because his manager, Adi Attar, is also Manny Pacquiao's manager. But then you talk to Manny Pacquiao's people, and there's, you know, this is a known thing with Pacquiao. He signs contracts with so many different people. He did it in 2006. He signed with Top Rank. A couple of weeks later, Oscar De La Hoya meets him at the airport, literally gives him a suitcase with $250,000 in cash, and Manny Pacquiao signs a contract with Golden Boy. So the people who were around Pacquiao that I spoke to said, hey, they already avoided the contract with Adi Attar. He's not Manny's manager, and he has got obligations to TGB and the Premier Boxing Champions. So it's really a mess from the Manny side. I think it would be a big pay-per-view if they could get it done, but my guess is it's probably unlikely to happen, Jim.
So, Kevin, where, if you had to guess, is Conor's head right now? Does Conor, I mean, what's motivating him at this point?
You know, I think, you know, Conor's, like a lot of fighters do, misses that spotlight. You know, they don't want to do media. They don't like to be out there, but they love that spotlight, and they love hearing everybody talk about him. It's, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard admitted that's why he came back so many times. He just missed that, you know, being in that spotlight and having everybody talk about him. And I think Conor misses that, but I'm not so sure he misses everything else that comes with the fight game. And so, you know, it's like the fact that he wants to box, like, why do you want to box somebody? Obviously, you're, you know, I believe Floyd Mayweather carried him in that first fight that they had and could have finished him earlier. Manny's not going to carry him. And, you know, in all due respect to Conor, who I think is a fantastic mixed martial artist, you know, he's going to get blown out by you know, Conor. Manny won't carry him. Manny will stop him early. And I don't know why Conor would want to put himself in that spot. They're two different sports. You know, they're cousins, but they're different sports. And it's not the same thing. And Manny has boxed all his life. And, you know, he's coming off wins over Adrian Broner and Keith Thurman. You know, he's still got it. I think it's a tough thing for him. And so I don't understand what Conor is thinking. I think really, at the end of the day, the only thing that this says to me is he really wants that big payday.
Kevin Ioli, friend of the program and the first sports writer to be honored as outstanding journalist by the Nevada Press Association, and again, covering boxing and MMA both for Yahoo Sports. And Kevin, I agree with you. I'm not saying that it's easy, but I think that's what he wants, the payday. Kevin, great to have you back. Thank you so much. I know we'll do it again soon.
See you, Jim. Be well.
Good job. You be well. Kevin Ioli, very distinguished journo. Love the way he goes about his business. Like, Conor, I mean, as Kevin I always says, these two things are not one and the same. They may be cousins, but they're not one and the same. Why does Conor keep saying that he wants to box? I mean, it's one thing to say, I want to fight, and I want to fight Floyd Mayweather, and the money's crazy, and it hasn't been done. All right, fine. And it went pretty well. He held his own. But Manny Pacquiao is a different deal. Why would you want to do that? Because you're beefing with Dana? Or because you think it would be easier? Because it might not be easier. So I'm not really sure exactly where Conor's head is at. I know that as much as I love this guy, he's not nearly as interesting to me as he used to be. Before he was popping old guys in the pub for not drinking his whiskey and running dollies through buses and getting into it with fans, the guy was like the most amazing story ever. One of my favorite guys ever. And I still think that he can get back to a place like that if he were to refocus, but I'm just not seeing it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we're jumping around. I've got plenty of more NFL I want to get to. There is some MMA. We'll hit some college football this hour with Andy Staples. I've got baseball. We made it to the end of that so-called bastardized sprint. We've got our postseason set up right now. Who do you like? Could we get the Dodger-Padre matchup that we want? Maybe, maybe not. The Dodgers are not exactly rewarded. In fact, none of the top seeds, neither of the top seeds, are rewarded for a short season like that. I mean, it's cliche, but it's true. Anything could happen in a best-of-three matchup. What if the Dodgers get bounced early on? This alleged best Dodger team ever, and it might be, might not matter at all. So I want to get into all of that as well. Bills Mafia, where are you? I know that Rick in Buffalo is not an easy guy to follow, but you are undefeated. You blew a 28-3 lead. You came back. Hello, help from the refs. Who cares? And now you are undefeated. Who do you have tonight? Two best teams in the NFL. Best matchup of the regular season coming up tonight. Chiefs, Ravens. The Chiefs have had their number. They're plus +3. Normally, I would argue if something seems too good to be true, it generally is. The Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes plus +3.
Mahomes?
Doesn't that seem too good to be true? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. All of that's coming up. Stay after it. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you are talking to somebody who is not waiting for their turn to speak, but who is actually listening to what you have to say. They want to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you. They're ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and they offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors do listen. So know that your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. 877-ASK-DELL.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Sunday, it's an NFL and CBS doubleheader with Brady's Bucks hosting the Chargers. Two of the AFC's best are going to go toe-to-toe. The Steelers take on the Titans. In the second game, most of you are going to see Cam and the Patriots in Kansas City for a meeting with
Mahomes
and the Chiefs. Coverage getting underway with the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS, and I will be making an appearance on the program. My second appearance of the year, NFL on CBS, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. I did receive the all-important Drew Kalisky email this morning. I've got my marching orders. I have my topics. I'm fired up. I'll be ready for that. So a doubleheader on CBS on Sunday, starting with JB and the fellas, and I will make my appearance as well. Dear Rome, nothing wrong with drinking Michelob Ultra. Signed, when you're lost in the desert and you're about to drink your own urine. Casey in New Hampshire. Listen, Casey, I'm not fighting this war. This is not a part of the path. This is not the hill that I'm dying on. I'm not going to battle for this at all. This is in response. It would have never come up. I literally would have never come up. It would have never come up. I would say for the record, this is the first time I've ever walked into a store and walked out with a six-pack of Ultra this weekend. I'm not here to fight that war. I happened to post a picture on Twitter of me watching the UFC card because Kevin Ioli, who just came up on the program, had tweeted at me, "Are you watching the fights, Jim?" And I said, "Yes." And I showed a picture, and then on my table in my family room was a single bottle of Ultra. Quote, signed, "When you're lost in the desert and you're about to drink your own urine." I've covered this a million times, really, really quickly. My relationship with liquor is as follows. I do not drink Sunday to Thursday pretty much ever for any reason. Not a beer, not a glass of wine, nothing. I just don't. It's a work week. Friday and Saturday, I like my adult beverage, my cocktail. Back in the day, exclusively gin. Then I downgraded, quote, downgraded to vodka. These days, I drink a little tequila. In and around all of that, I would mix in a Heine. But as the world changes, so do my tastes. I'm not feeling that so much anymore. So, on a Saturday night, watching basketball, watching MMA, I wanted to watch with a beer in my hand. I tried the Ultra. Counting calories, that's all that is. That's all that was. So I don't want to hear about drinking my own urine. Why would I do that, Casey? Why would anybody do that, Casey? How thirsty would you have to be, Casey? Stop doing it, Casey. All right, back to football for a minute. I want to finish my thoughts on the Bills and the Rams. So Buffalo jumps on LA, 28-3. I'm all set to start talking about how these guys are bona fide and legitimate Super Bowl contenders, except the Rams come all the way back. They come all the way back, not only all the way back from down 28-3, they're up 32-28 with less than a minute to go. Not only that, but the Bills were down to a fourth down. If they don't convert it, that game is over. Buffalo never lives it down. You can only imagine the heat they'd all be getting on this show right now. Fourth down. They've got to convert. Roll it.
Fourth down and nine. Bills have to get it or the Rams win. Back to throw. Here comes the rush. Checks it middle. It's incomplete. Oh. It's incomplete, but a flag. A late flag thrown from the left sideline. McVay going ballistic with 21 seconds left. He can't believe it. It goes against Darius Williams.
I mean, you want late? Like, that flag only now is coming flying in that late. And that was not pass interference. I mean, that was so blatant and so horrible. Normally, I'm the first one to say I don't want to get caught up in this, but I'll get caught up in this. That was not PI. Not even close. That was a terrible call by the officials, period. And the Rams were right to be pissed about that. And yes, I understand the karma factor and that the Rams were the beneficiaries of the single worst PI incident in the history of the Shield.
Third down and 10, Breeze from the gun, takes the snap, goes to the near side, hit early, fair. Where's the flag?
You don't get one.
Early hit on Tommy Lee, Sean Payton is all the way down at the 10, unbelievable no call.
Wow.
If you're wondering, did Rome just bring that up because he wanted to play that, or in this case, reference that? The answer is yes, because that clip is still the funniest clip in NFL history. I'm telling you, you call that clip up right now and you watch that and tell me you're not laughing out loud. That is still one of the funniest things I've ever seen in the history of sports. NRC nearly decapitated a man on the field. And the refs are like, nah. Yeah, we're going to let you play. We're going to let you all play. Incidental contact. So yes, the Rams got screwed. Hey, Big Head, anytime you want to stop crying about that, that'll be fine. They got screwed. You did too, Big Head. It's a fact. But here's another fact. Josh Allen seized the moment and took advantage of it.
Josh waiting. Now the snap. Josh going to throw it. Looks, fires into the end zone. He's got Tyler Kroft open. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Touchdown, Bills! A four-yard toss. Josh Allen to Tyler Kroft for the touchdown. 15 seconds left on the clock. Unbelievable.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Unbelievable.
On the clock. Man, you're focused on the wrong thing. It's not about the ref. It's about Allen. For the season, he's thrown for more than 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. He's rushed for two more. He has just one INT, and he's got a passer rating of just below 125. This guy has been ramming Crows Sandoz down everybody's throat that has ever questioned or doubted him, and he's doing it on a weekly basis. And it's damn impressive. Like I said, if it were not for Russell Wilson, he would be your MVP favorite. And the thing is, Russ is doing things that are just on a totally different level from everybody else. I need time to talk about Russ, too. Again, I need more real estate. I need more runway. But for the moment, Josh Allen, MVP candidate. Yes, I said it, and he's backed it up. This guy is so much better. So much better this year in every facet of the game. The guy looks amazing. And the Bills are undefeated, and they're right there. I want to get to Russ. thing about Russ is going to need some help. Russ is going to need some help from that defense, which he's not getting right now. Russ is going to need some help in running the football, which he probably will get. But Russ has never looked better. I didn't think Russ could get any better. He's definitely gotten better. All that is still ahead. Let me change up for you once again, though. When we come back, they are playing college football, and some weird things happened this past Saturday. We will get into that with Andy Staples. Anybody want to call? Anybody want to call and participate here? Because you can't tell me, hey, Rome, it's a pandemic, man. There's nothing to talk about. Oh, hell yes, there is. There is so much to talk about. NFL, college football, MMA, NHL Stanley Cup Final, NBA Finals, MLB postseason about to get underway. Oh, there's a lot to talk about. Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. Here is a sports up.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I need to remind you of something. All beef jerky is not the same. Old Trapper is better. Better for you, higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Momentarily, I'm going to run down Andy Staples, and we are going to talk some college football because there are some wild things going on around the sport this past weekend. And when I say in a moment, I mean right this second. He does cover college football, and in addition to that, all barbecue-related issues. For The Athletic, he is host of The Andy Staples Show. He's a friend of the program. He is Andy Staples. Andy, it's been a minute or two since you and I have spoken before we get into college football. How you doing, man? How is life for you right now?
I'm good, Jim. It's, you know, I have not gotten around to the various parts of the country to sample as much barbecue as I'm used to, but I took advantage of being homebound to lose a little weight so now I can gain it all back eating on the road when I get to go back.
I like it. Well played. All right, so the SEC, Andy, returned over the weekend. I got to first ask, what was it like to be in Auburn, Alabama on a football Saturday for a home game and not see any traffic or any tailgating or anything at all like that?
It was weird, Jim, because, you know, they had the state troopers at the interstate exits waiting to direct traffic, and there was no traffic to direct. You just kind of drove right in, and they only let students into the game other than people in the suites and the guests of the coaches and players. And so it was very limited group, and it was quiet. But then once the game kicked off, you just kind of locked in on that, and it felt like football again.
Andy Staples joining us. All right, so from a game standpoint, Auburn ultimately beats Kentucky 29-13 in a game where Bo Nix had 277 yards from scrimmage, three touchdown passes. How did Nix look to you, and overall, how did the Auburn offense look?
Bo Nix was really good, and the thing about Auburn is we kept saying, if Bo Nix grows up, if he matures as a quarterback, because he's just a true freshman last year, that they are going to be somebody you got to worry about in the SEC, that they could potentially compete for the West title, and if you can compete for the West title, you can compete for anything. And he looked much more mature. There were plays that last year would have been sacks or interceptions or, you know, whatever kind of negative play you want, and he found a way to get them out of it. So I thought that was big for them. They still need to be able to run the ball a little more between the tackles. We'll find out when they play Georgia on Saturday how far along they've come on that part of it. But Bo Nix looked ready to play some of these teams he's going to have to play down the road.
Andy Staples, my guest, I would agree with you. You don't want to make a snap judgment based off of only one game, but he looked much better. So then you mentioned Georgia. Auburn's going to Georgia Saturday, the Bulldogs. Andy, you're coming off a win over Arkansas where they were trailing 7-5 at halftime before going on to win 37-10. Again, only one game, but where is Georgia as a team right now?
Well, that we don't know what their offense is going to be, Jim. We know their defense is good, and it was good last year. They have almost everybody back. They look great on Saturday. But the offense was a mess at first, and they went to Stetson Bennett, who was kind of buried on the depth chart when this offseason started, and he got them going. But the question is, will he be the starter on Saturday, or will it be JT Daniels, the transfer from USC? Because Kirby Smart just said a couple hours ago, JT Daniels now medically cleared to play. He had an ACL tear last year at USC. So do they go to him, or do they stick with Stetson Bennett, who, if you watch that second half, it was working a little better with him?
Andy Stables, my guest. I mean, it's just, I'm just kind of stopping for 1 minute. It's just so great to be talking SEC football, which is what we're doing right now. It's just awesome. Like, you look around the SEC, Andy, Mississippi State goes into Death Valley and beat the defending national champs, LSU. So let me start here. Does that game say more about LSU or about Mississippi State?
I think it says more about Mississippi State right now. Just that they were, we thought, you don't have much time. You've got a new quarterback who's transferring in from Stanford and KJ Costello. How ready is that offense going to be? Now, Mike Leach has always told us that the air raid is a pretty simple offense to teach and learn. And, I mean, I'm thinking if you got KJ Costello, who was a good quarterback at Stanford, mastered a pretty complex offense there, that he'd be pretty good in that. But I didn't think he'd be 600-something yards good. And, you know, I've been saying all season this would be the most talented team that Mike Leach has ever coached. I mean, he never had this kind of athletes top to bottom at Texas Tech or Washington State, but the competition level is higher too. And so I figured, okay, they're going to go to LSU. They're going to get some yards. They're going to score some points, but they're not going to beat LSU. No, they took it right to them. And then if you look at the end, when LSU had kind of figured out what their offense should be doing and they're trying to come back, Mississippi State's putting Miles Brennan on his back. So I don't think Mike Leach has had this kind of defense on one of his teams either. So I'm really interested to see what he can do with this.
I was going to say, I mean, it's one thing, like, given the talent that LSU lost, Andy, after last year, it'd be understandable if it took a step back. But to your point, and I like KJ Costello a lot, but to see him going into Death Valley and throwing for 623 yards and five TDs in a 10-point win over LSU, I certainly did not see that. But to your point about Mississippi State, like, what is the ceiling? Where do they go from here? How good can they be this year?
Well, if they can beat LSU, they can beat most of the teams in the SEC. Now, Alabama will be the question. And I'm curious because, you know, when Mike Leach was at Washington State, it was always Washington for him that he could not solve them. They always shut them down. Alabama strikes me as that type of opponent for Mississippi State. But if you can beat LSU, I would think you can play with Auburn, you can play with Texas A&M, you can, you know, we saw Ole Miss on Saturday, their defense did not look great against Florida, but their offense looked good. So, I mean, the Egg Bowl may be 5 hours long. It may be the day after Thanksgiving by the time it ends.
Andy Staples joining us. All right, so you mentioned Ole Miss. Kyle Trask completed more than 71% of his passes for more than 400 yards and six TDs in Florida's win over Ole Miss. How impressive is Trask and Florida overall?
Florida's offense looked really good. Their defense was a little suspect, but I think, you know, we'll see. They were missing quite a few guys. And then you've also got the factor of that offense at Ole Miss with some really good skill guys was a complete mystery to them until the game started. You know, they're going to be dealing with teams from now on where they at least got a little film on them. So the offense looked great. They broke one of Steve Spurrier's records, which I believe Steve Spurrier paid off that bet with a mini bottle of Sutter's Home Companion to Dan Mullen today.
Right.
Very disappointed, but very on brand for Coach, because I think he probably got it for free, and it's probably been sitting around his house for a while.
I love it. Andy Staples joining us. Andy, what about number three, Oklahoma? 28-7 lead over K-State with 6 minutes to go in the third. Kansas State comes all the way back. They win that game 38-35. What happened to Oklahoma, and how bad of a loss is that?
It's a bad loss. But remember, Oklahoma lost to K-State last year and still won the Big 12 and made the playoffs. But I think you're asking a lot of Spencer Rattler, the quarterback at Oklahoma, who he only had two incompletions in the first half, but they were both interceptions, and one of them led to a touchdown. But you're asking a lot of him to be what Baker Mayfield was, what Kyler Murray was, what Jalen Hurts was. I mean, think about those guys. Jalen Hurts, before he got to Oklahoma, had taken Alabama to the national title game twice as a starter. You know, Kyler Murray at least had started some games as a true freshman at A&M. He was a fourth-year player when he became the starter. And Baker Mayfield had been a starting quarterback at Texas Tech before he got to Oklahoma. So you're asking a lot of this redshirt freshman who was playing his first Big 12 game to be as good as those guys, because I don't think their defense is there yet. So it's still going to need to be.
Better.
That's right.
Right, and this year is just so different anyway. Andy, let me get you a shift out to the West Coast. What do you make, and I'm curious of your thoughts on this, what do you make of how the Pac-12 has handled their season?
You know, when they postponed, I understood why. They had different municipalities that had different rules that other parts of the country weren't dealing with, where some teams were having a hard time even letting guys lift weights together. So I understand why they postponed. They made a deal on September 3rd with a company to do these rapid response tests so they could test daily. And I thought, okay, well, now they're going to start trying to figure out how to come back. But they didn't. And then the Big Ten decides a couple weeks later, hey, we're coming back. And all of a sudden the Pac-12 is like, wait a second. Oh, we need to come back too. And you wonder, like, what were you doing in the meantime? Because in California, in Oregon, they had to go to the governments and say, hey, can we do this? And the governments were like, yeah, you could have submitted a plan to us all along, but you're just doing it now. So it's one of those things where until the Big Ten moved, they weren't going to do anything. And I just find that kind of weird. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're going to get a season on, sort of, and just like the Big Ten, but they're going to start a couple weeks later. And I just feel like if they'd been a little more proactive, they probably could be starting with the Big Ten.
So you wonder exactly what's going on here. For instance, you raised this question in a piece for The Athletic. Why isn't Larry Scott fighting to get the Pac-12 into the college football playoff? Like, how would you answer that question? What do you think?
I don't know why. I mean, I've asked people there, you know, who are in the league, and, you know, because if you look at this year, there will be no non-conference games for the most part. There were a few early on with some leagues, but the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 are going to be completely conference-only. So you don't have any of those points of comparison for the committee to look at. And so people are going to be locked in on the stereotypes that they've had for the last few years. Well, the stereotype of the Pac-12 is they don't play good football. So they have no chance to prove that wrong. So if I were the commissioner, Larry Scott, I would be saying, hey, just this year, let's expand the playoffs. Since we don't really have a non-conference schedule for anybody, we could do all the Power 5 champs make the playoff, and then the highest-ranked Group of 5 champ makes the playoff, and a couple at-larges. And then that way, we can deal with this fact that nobody's going to get to play each other and we can't figure out which conference is better. But he's not done any of that. He's not advocated for that at all. And I would argue he should have been advocating for an expanded playoff 2 years ago because they keep getting left out. And isn't your job to put the conference in the best possible position?
Andy, not only is he not advocating for it, but as you point out, he said, quote, there's really no serious momentum or discussion
right.
around expansion. We're committed to traditional dates. How and why is he committed to traditional dates? Why? Why would you
be? That part I don't know. And I had people argue, well, he's trying to do what's best for college football. He doesn't work for college football. His checks come from the Pac-12. He needs to do what's best for the Pac-12.
So, yeah, I'm not exactly sure exactly what's going on other than he is not advocating for the expanded playoff for sure. He covers college football and, well, as soon as you can hit on the road. So, Andy, like when you – nobody knows, right? This is the problem. Nobody knows. But when you can officially get out there and things loosen up, where are you headed to first for barbecue-related issues? Do you have a short list of destinations for when it is okay and responsible?
I have hit the road – a little bit already. The first FBS game of the year was Southern Miss in South Alabama in
right.
Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So I got on the road and I drove there, stopped in Mobile, Alabama, Meat Boss Barbecue, had a pulled pork sandwich with jalapeno jelly on it. It was outstanding. So I'm easing it back in a little bit. I had in Tallahassee, I had a stuffed wing. Did you know you can put mac and cheese in a chicken wing?
I did not know. How does that work? Can you? How?
You put it in there, and then you drop it in the fryer, and it works. I don't know why it works, but it works.
Did it live up to the hype? Did it meet your expectations?
It was mac and cheese and a chicken wing, Jim. It speaks for itself.
You're right. I retract that question. It speaks for itself. Andy Staples covering college football. He's the host of the Andy Staples Show. Good friend of the program, Andy. It's so good to have you back. Great to hear your voice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
My man, he's right. You put mac and cheese in a chicken wing. What else is there to say about that? I just didn't know exactly how that worked. But now I do. And now I need to know more. All right, so we're setting up hour number three. I mentioned that I was going to front load. When I say I'm going to front load, what that means is the three interviews are in the first half of the program. So there they are. Now they're done. The third hour is open. Ending this hour with some reaction. The MMQB tweets, Nick Foles has officially been named the Chicago Bears starting quarterback. Uh-huh. Sky's blue. Water is wet. You clones will bring me down. Dot, dot, dot. Of course. Mitch Trubisky. Like, the most Mitch Trubisky thing ever is the team is 2-0, and he still loses his job. That's not easy to do. And then Nick Foles does what he does, you know, shows up. And I did say, as part of my take earlier, he shows up unexpectedly. Of course, that's not true. If you're backing up Mitchell Trubisky, there is nothing unexpected about you getting into a game. You're getting in no matter what because you're backing up Mitch Trubisky. Mike near Jax tweets, Mick Ultra is great for staying hydrated when drinking bourbon. You mean that whole have a drink, have a glass of water, have a drink, have a glass of water, drink bourbon, drink some Mick Ultra. Yeah, look, I mean, we can have this conversation, but I've got no dog in this fight. I'm not invested in this. It was just something I did. I posted the picture. Geoff saw the picture. I'm not going to battle. I'm not team Mick Ultra. Nor am I against it. It's actually too small a sample. It's only 1 week or one game or one beer. I don't know where I come out yet. I know, but I'm coming back for hour number three. I know that. Stay tuned.